You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science and Sport. Today we are in Arezzo.
Cozze citene, cozze, cozze piscine, nus picudeci cora, nus picudeci cora.
Passa con loro lo stesso, passa, fa così tranquillo. Okay. 2:30, per il momento fa lo mismo, lo stesso che me.
We were played in there by the bells in Foligno this morning at the stage start, midday bells, full of foreboding, ominous sounding bells. That was very atmospheric, I felt. Then we heard a clip from the stage today. That was Bingen Fernandez, the director sportif at the Cannondale team. He was speaking there in Italian to his rider Moreno Moser, who was in the big breakaway. And we had a mole, Kaylee Fretz from Velo News, planted in the car, and he kindly recorded that bit of audio for us. We then heard something I recorded at the finish. I was standing at the finish in Arezzo, and that was as the stage winner, Gianluca Brambilla, came past and the crowd went wild. A home win.
Absolutely right, yeah. Shall I give my little wrap-up of the day?
Dove siamo, Lionel?
Oh, of course. Well, we're outside the press room in Arezzo. A lovely town, it looks, from what I saw of it earlier on, but we're sort of stuck out the back somewhere in some kind of technical centre.
Dumoulin, we're out the back.
We certainly are. Well, yeah, the story of Stage 8 then, from Foligno to Arezzo, 186 kilometres crossing from Umbria into Tuscany, and we have a new pink jersey. The Italian Gianluca Brambilla won a gripping stage which featured a dirt road second category climb quite near to the finish. That was Etix Quickstep's third stage win of the Giro, equaling their Belgian rivals Lotto Soudal, and Brambilla has ended the day in pink. It's the first time in his seven-year career that he's ever led a stage race.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the race was animated by a group of 12. It went clear with two from Etix, Brambilla and his teammate Matteo Trentin. Matteo Monteguti of AG2R was there. So was Moreno Moser, as you mentioned, Rich, from Cannondale. And Alessandro De Marchi of BMC. And as soon as we heard those names, we thought that's got a chance of going to the finish. They had 3.5 minutes when they reached Arezzo with 28k to go. And then they had to do the big loop. And it was on the dusty Alpe di Poti where all the action happened. Up front, Monteguti went clear, and then Brambilla, who was third at Strada Bianchi, not that far from here, in March, also another race held on these dusty roads. Brambilla caught and passed Monteguti to win the stage. But the drama overall was all happening behind. There were a number of strong attacks by Alejandro Valverde of Movistar, the first of which put the pink jersey Tom Dumoulin in difficulty. Vincenzo Nibali of Astana joined in the aggression, particularly on the downhill sections. So the riders, other than Brambilla, who will be very happy tonight, are Valverde, Nibali, Ilnur Zakarin, who's up to second, and Stephen Kruijswijk of Lotto Jumbo, who is now third. Dumoulin slips down to 11th, 1:05 behind Brambilla. Greipel, Jungels and Wellens are still in red, white and blue, respectively. Tomorrow, it's a 40k time trial.
Well, we pass through countryside that's very familiar to me today, Lionel. I wintered in Umbria, in Perugia.
Oh.
I wintered in Perugia a couple of years, right about 1996, 1997.
Was this when you were trying to become a professional cyclist?
I was a professional cyclist, Lionel. I came to stay with a friend of mine who was at the University Per Stranieri in Perugia, a university for foreigners who go and learn Italian. He was there a couple of years, my friend James Tyler. Hi, James, if you're listening. You won't be. But and I went and stayed with him a couple of winters and trained on these roads around here. Perugia is a beautiful hilltop town. Umbria is basically Tuscany without tourists. It is beautiful. We're in Tuscany now, just on the edge of it. But Umbria is really a very sort of secret Italian secret place. You know, if you want to go somewhere away from the beaten crowds, a place like Assisi, Perugia, really beautiful old towns right on the top of a hill. I was staying right in the centre, which meant every day a 6 kilometre climb back up to my apartment where I was staying with my mate Jim. And that was hard work, but it was...
It's a wonder you didn't make it, Rich, really, isn't
great.
It?
It was great. I really loved it. It was the winters here were sunny but cold, you know, perfect weather for cycling in. Great fun. So well, it was. We drove right past Perugia, brought back all these memories flooding back.
We also drove right past Arezzo this afternoon, didn't we? We had a bit of a mishap.
Our first
mishap of the
and
Giro.
What a mishap it was.
Well, it was. I mean, it always happens on the days that appear to be so simple. We had quite a short drive in comparison to the marathons of recent days, and we just didn't turn off the motorway at Arezzo as we should, and we had to go past
it. Well, it got worse, didn't it? Because the next turn off was 20 kilometres up the road. We drove for 20 kilometres in stony silence, came off at the next slipway.
I thought you took it well.
Yeah,
really.
No, we weren't, it wasn't too bad. Paid to come off the road, went round the roundabout, paid to get back on, and then took the wrong slip road and ended up going the wrong way again.
We were heading towards Florence at
another
one point,
15 kilometres, and then it was.
And when we got here, horrendous. there was no buffet left, or the buffet had shut down and gone. So I've not had any lunch. I've not eaten since
off
breakfast.
A couple of slices of pizza.
Well, you did, but yeah, I was watching the race here in the press room, and what a race it was! I mean,
oh yeah, we're going to talk about that.
It was a cracking race, wasn't it?
It was really good.
One of those days when the action splits into two very definite parts, and the TV coverage really works on days like this because you get to see the break, and the gap is big enough between the two that you can see the breakaway go over the climb, and then you can watch the GC riders, and we got really good shots of the GC riders
and we went over
attacking.
The Strada Bianchi, the dirt, the white roads of Tuscany, which are, you know, famous from the eponymous race Strada Bianchi, which Gianluca Brambilla was unlucky not to win this year. That was, like, I put it to his director sportif Davide Bramati that was like a dress rehearsal, and let's hear from Bramati now. I spoke to Bramati at the finish. A perfect day for you.
Yeah, not only for it's not for me, it's for the team. We are team today. We are very happy because Brambilla won stage, and then he take a pin jerseys from Italy. I think everybody from Italy have the dream to take the pin jersey.
We saw him at Strada Bianchi. He was very strong there. Obviously, these roads suit him. Was that a sort of dress rehearsal for this stage?
The Strade Bianche, he did a very, very good read for 75K, and then we lost Strade Bianche at 300 meters to go because we found strong riders Cancellara, but today I think it's better today with the stage at the pin jersey, and then we think for next year for Strade Bianche again.
He would swap Strade Bianche for this, you think?
Yeah, no, was the same, but it was... only one climb and he did a very good job. The team did perfect. Also behind we protect Bob and the Trentin in the front did amazing work for Brambilla.
As an Italian, there's a big Italian contingent in the team. It must be a very special day.
Yeah, sure. We are here, three Italian riders and then some people off of the staff. Sure, tonight we enjoy the pin jersey.
The celebration. Maybe some Chianti. Bob Jungels is riding extremely well and rode again well today. What do you expect from him at this Giro? Is it about learning?
For him, he needed to learn because it's the first big tour. It's the first time to be leader in the team. And then he needed to learn a lot. But we have a time. He's young. Sure, we heard him. He's a name in the future for a long time.
I think some people expected Davide Formolo to take the young rider's jersey a couple of days ago. Are you surprised at how he's been riding so far?
Yeah, I think Formolo in the first week in the Giro, I think he had some problem, but we have had, again in the front a lot of climb. And then I think now will be easy, but sure we will do our best for try to win the white jersey.
And maybe the pink jersey.
Yeah, pin jersey I think will be the big dream, but I don't think so, but we enjoy the jersey tonight.
And you'll enjoy following the pink jersey in the time trial tomorrow.
Yeah, sure. I'm the sport director, I'm Italian, and sure I follow Brambilla.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to you.
So that was Davide Bramati talking about Brambilla. There was lots of celebrations at the Ethics Quickstep bus. Huge Italian contingent there, not just riders but staff as well. You know, going right back, it was at one. It's sort of the remnants of MAPPA in a way, isn't it? Joined up with the Belgian team run by Patrick Lefebvre, and you know, now it's we're watching a very near miss there for a car. Slightly off-putting. But yeah, they were obviously extremely happy. You mentioned Bob Jungels as well, who did lose a little bit of time today, but is still riding extremely well. Before we go on, just a little nugget from the start, because I think some of us were expecting Fabian Cancellara to perhaps be up there today. He's looked a bit stronger the last couple of days. I overheard him at the start chatting to a Dutch rider from Lotto Jumbo. The Dutch rider had obviously asked him whether he was going to, you know, be up there today, and he said not today, but maybe tomorrow, i.e. for the time trial. And yeah, I suppose that these two stages potentially suited Cancellara. He said this morning that he was saving it for tomorrow.
Well, yeah, if he's been sick, you know, he might be pushing his luck to try something today and hope to still have legs tomorrow. But let's talk about Brambilla, the first Italian pink jersey of this Giro d'Italia after a German and Dutch stranglehold on it so far. As I said before, it's the first time Brambilla's actually led a stage race in his 7-year career. He's won races before and he has had a good spring, as he said, third in Strada Bianchi there. But you may also remember him from quite an amazing incident on the road in the Vuelta at España 2 years ago. He and Ivan Rovni of the Tinkoff team were both kicked out of the Vuelta mid-stage for some really unseemly jersey pulling and fisticuffs. And if you remember Brambilla riding alongside the camera, thumping his chest and, you know, blowing kisses to the camera, having been disqualified while the race was still going on. What struck me as interesting was that Ivan Rovni is riding here as well. So I wonder how Rovni feels about Brambilla's...
Bike. It was an on-bike fight, which is preferable to an off-bike fight, because we see when cyclists get off the bike and start fighting each other with their cleated shoes. Oh. It's very embarrassing, isn't it?
It is. It's like something out of It's a Knockout, if you remember the programme.
Look it up on YouTube,
80s.
You'll find some famous old fights. One involving Acacio da Silva years and years ago. Mm. You know, just ridiculous. It's like people fighting on ice wearing very slippy shoes.
Well, that was a low point in Brambilla's career, but this was obviously a very big high point. He talked about how strongly they were riding at the start of the stage to get that breakaway and to get a good enough advantage that would go to the finish. And obviously with the climb, the Alpi di Poti coming not that close to the finish, so it's still a long way
left
to go.
Left himself with a lot to do, didn't
a
he?
A lot
he went
to do.
Early and,
yeah, and he made the point that when Matteo Montaguti was up the road, Brambilla said that Montaguti was either going too hard or he knows the climb better than me. And as it turned out, Montaguti was probably going too hard, because Brambilla timed his move pretty well, got over the top, and then it was a pursuit race between those two Italians, and he's done very well. A little round of applause from the Italian journalist for him in the press conference.
I'll tell
which
you what,
is
Daniel can talk about this a little bit. The time I've keep my voice down here because we're surrounded by Italian journalists, but they're a disgrace. they were taking selfies yesterday with Tom Dumoulin.
Oh, they were doing
the press conference.
Yeah, they were doing that again. I mean,
it's extraordinary.
Not something we'd ever engage in, is it?
No, you say that, but of course we wouldn't. I mean, you're not here to take selfies with riders or ask for autographs, and you see that happening a lot here. I know Daniel's spoken about this before.
It's different over here though, isn't it? There isn't the same sort of doesn't feel to be the same distance between journalists and the people they're covering. Brambilla was obviously asked, with his advantage that he's got, which isn't all that big, how he fancies himself for the time trial tomorrow. And he did point out that 2 years ago, 2014, there was a very similar time trial at Barolo, where it was up and down, left and right, and he was fifth in that time trial, behind Rigoberto Urán, who won it. Diego Ulisi was also up there. Cadel Evans was still riding then, and Rafał Majka. So although Brambilla was 1:53 behind Urán that day, which obviously shows that he's not going to keep the pink jersey tomorrow unless he pulls out something remarkable.
Well, I was at the finish in Arezzo, and I was standing beside a woman who was in floods of tears, and I assumed it was Brambilla's partner who was overcome by emotion. Turned out, I think it was Montaguti's girlfriend who was genuinely sad. So that the tears were coming from a sad place rather than a happy place.
Well, in a stage race like this, Rich, for every winner there has to be 188 losers, or however many riders we've still got left in the race.
Roughly about that, yeah. Shall we talk a little bit about the overall picture today? Because that was fascinating. A real shake-up there. Tom Dumoulin struggled badly, was isolated. We'll talk about him. And the other Dutchman who emerged at the front today, Stephen Kruiswijk, in the next part, will be joined by a Dutch journalist for that. So let's talk about the other guys. I mean, Valverde was very impressive, went really early on the climb. First time he's really showed his hand.
Yeah, and when he showed his hand, he didn't disguise anything, did he? He went hard repeatedly. Again, Valverde is a sort of the master, isn't he, at just plotting his way around a three-week stage race. And he'll have had a clear plan of what he was trying to achieve. And I think it's shaken it up to the extent that we now know who the sort of half dozen or so contenders are going to be. I mean, run through them. It's going to be Zakarin, Kruiswijk, Valverde, Nibali, Chavez, Juran, Mica, possibly Pozzovivo and Landa. And they
Landa
all
did well, because Landa was initially dropped and he got out of jail, really scrambled his way back up to that group. Miraculously, he was with Dumoulin for a bit, I think, and I don't really know how he got up to that group, but he did, and that was an exceptional ride.
It was an exceptional ride, because he could have found himself in exactly the same boat as Tom Dumoulin, which was leaking water, wasn't it? What it really sums up now is that we have got a cracking race, because no one really looks that much stronger than anyone else at the moment. The time trial will tell us quite a lot, and there could be some significant-ish gaps tomorrow, and then it's a sort of countdown to the really big mountains, but there's no real pattern set.
No patterns yet, Lionel, but yeah, Valverde looked ominously strong, and I was surprised after his poor performance a couple of days ago to see Vincenzo Nibali looking strong as well. Hang on, Lionel, what's that? What's that noise?
Finalmente potei baciarla come un uomo bacia una donna, donarle una rosa e prometterle che nessuno mai ci avrebbe separato. I could finally kiss her like a man kisses a woman, give her a rose and promise her that no one would ever pull us apart.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Eurosport are sponsoring us at the Giro d'Italia. I had to think about what race we were at there for a second. They're sponsoring our daily Pedalar de Charme award. Yes, we had Bob Jungels. Didn't manage to get a t-shirt to him today, but I've been promised I will have an audience with him tomorrow. He's still riding very well. There was an overwhelming support today for Gianluca Brambilla, a rider we've already been talking a lot about. This award shouldn't just go to the guy who's won, but he gets it for wearing a very cool cap on the podium, not a baseball cap, but a proper cycling casquette.
Yeah, with the flap folded up, old school style, looked good, didn't
That's
it?
That's more than worthy of Pedalar de Charme. So Brambilla, I'll try and find him tomorrow, shouldn't be difficult. He'll be wearing a pink jersey, should be easy to identify, and give him an even more coveted garment, the Pedalar de Charme t-shirt. Now, we've been joined by Dan Hakkenberg of Algemeen Dagblad, the Dutch newspaper, the only Dutch journalist on the race since we left Holland, although I think you've been joined by a few of your countrymen now, but you're going to give us a bit of an insight into a couple of your countrymen, Tom Dumoulin, not such a good day, Stephen Kruiswijk, sorry, the pronunciation please, Dan.
Stephen Kruiswijk, as we say in Holland.
Stephen Kruiswijk. We'll try and keep that up for the rest of the Giro.
We take it like this. I guess Stephen is fine with it.
Yeah. I'm sure he's okay. Well, we both spoke to him after the finish, didn't we? Perhaps we should hear from him initially. I interviewed him for a bit in English before you elbowed me out of the way and spoke to him in Dutch for much longer. I started by asking him a really stupid question. Here's Stephen Kruiswijk. Stephen, today it felt like the Giro really started. Was that your feeling as well?
No, it started for me last Friday already, so
You must be pleased with your performance today.
Yeah, of course. I was hoping to be in the front, and today was the first real test. not a real test, but with the downhill, you cannot lose contact with the favorite. So I was hanging on there. The man is pretty well in the front. Didn't get into trouble, so for me it was a good day.
How impressive was Valverde? He seemed to do a lot of damage on the climb.
Yeah, he started pretty early on the. Actually, straight on the gravel, and all the guys tried to follow, and he was pulling pretty hard. He made a strong performance today, and also in the downhill and Nibali. But then at the finish, I know who to watch him.
Were you surprised to see Dumoulin lose contact today?
He was pretty strong, but as he said before, maybe this climb is maybe a little bit too steep for him, and I don't know. He already announced a little bit that he was not in his best shape uphill. I think maybe today was a little bit too much for him.
So that was Stephen Croswick. I don't think he liked my first question. It was a stupid question, but we all ask stupid questions from time to time.
Well, in the heat of the moment, you've just grabbed a rider as they come over the finish line. Sometimes words sort of evaporate from your head, don't they, Rich?
My adrenaline was high. You know, I was high on the stage just having finished, and I hadn't perhaps calmed down enough.
Like my teachers used to say in Holland, stupid questions doesn't exist. There are only stupid answers. So
thank you for your support, Dan. What did he tell you, Stephen?
Stephen most of the time talks in understatements, actually. But I asked him at a certain point, my last question was, Stephen, are there, if you look at the first 8 days of this Giro, I can only think that we got maybe two or three constant factors over here. Alejandro Valverde is one of them, but I think, in my opinion, Stephen Kruijswijk should be among that constant factors as well. For example, the first stage in Italy, the Praia Amara stage, that was the fourth stage. Exactly a year ago, in the fourth stage, he lost, I guess, 6 or 6.5 minutes on the later winner, Alberto Contador. Well, in this fourth stage, he already showed that he learned from last year. And if you see him standing right now, he's third overall on 33 seconds, I guess. And I think last year at this moment, it was maybe already 10 minutes, maybe even more.
And he had a great Giro last year. What we don't know a great deal about him other than the fact that he's got very broad shoulders. What can you tell us about him?
He just became a father, so that might be something. He's maybe a bit underestimated. We always had the big names in the Dutch team, like Robert Gesink, Bauke Mollema before, who is now riding with Trek, but also Wilco Kelderman came up as the young kid in town. But if you look a bit further, you can see that he's actually Stephen has always been there. And he likes the Giro. This is, I guess, his sixth appearance, and he only rode two Tour de France. He thinks this is his race. He likes it more. It suits him better. He likes the unexpected riding over here. And that's when you what you see today. He didn't leave Valverde a single moment, maybe in the last part of the climb, but he was always there. And he knew the guy to watch. So that's, I think, good for Stephen to see.
What can you tell us about Tom Dumoulin today? I think some of us were surprised to see him suffering. Not perhaps surprised to see him on his own. He was really isolated. You know, the team, we talked about the team in last night's podcast, are perhaps not, a bit like the Vuelta, they're not as strong as they could and should be to support an overall contender, which is how we've been talking about him. He did suffer badly today. How was he after the stage?
He was surprised himself, actually. That's what he literally said. He was surprised that the bad day, he expected a bad day, but maybe in the higher mountains, and he didn't expect the bad day to come today. Actually, he thought the today's stage would suit him. And if you just look at the road book, it would have been. But he was just no good, empty, no power, no energy. He said he had a bit of saddle sore, how you probably say it in English. But he didn't want to use too much excuses. He was just not good at not the right time.
And what's he expecting for the time trial tomorrow? Because obviously he came into this Giro saying it was all about the time trial stages. Then in the last day or two, he starts to talk about the overall, and then it goes pop.
Put the hex on himself, didn't he?
Yeah. And still, he said we go back, we scale back, or we go back to plan A, and that's the time trial. On the other hand, he was realistic as well. He said, "If I got today's legs, I won't win it." On the other hand, you could still see you could see in his disappointment, he was a bit of ambivalent. That's probably how I should pronounce it. He still aims for the victory tomorrow. On the other hand, he's realistic enough to say that if he won't recover from this, he won't be there tomorrow. On the other hand, he said as well, I might be in pink tomorrow, but you don't know if it's realistic. We only can find out tomorrow afternoon.
Just back to Stephen Kruijswijk again. He's, by comparison to Dumoulin, had a very quiet week. He's been in the shadows. Now he's third overall. That brings a different pressure. Is he ready for that pressure?
Well, I think he is. I spoke to some of his teammates, how he is as a number one guy in the squad, and everybody tells he's really clear on things, and he delivers, and he trusts his guys. He just follows blind. Bram Tankink said, one of the veterans out of the squad, he's really clear to us, and I think what I hear over here, what all the cycling journalism veterans say, you shouldn't see anybody in the first week who wants to be on GC in the end. So maybe it's even a bit early if you see it this way, that he's already becoming third. On the other hand, I spoke to his trainer Mathieu Heijboer in Apeldoorn already. He wrote a really good prologue. And his trainer told me that he's a sort of grown with his TT bike. I just saw the standings of last year. He became fifth in the long time trial last year. The only GC guy he had to pass was Alberto Contador, who took over the pink jersey at that day and didn't give it away anymore. So that tells something as well. And that TT was even, I think, 10 or 20K longer than what we have tomorrow.
We had a fantastic start in the Netherlands. Obviously, that was big news. How's the Giro being received back home? You say you're the only journalist from the Netherlands who's come over to Italy. Now the more reporters are arriving. But what's the kind of anticipation? Because it's been so long since the Dutch have had a Grand Tour champion. I think Zoetemelk in 1980 won the Tour de France. That's the last time?
That's the last time. And Breukink made it to the podium two times over here in the Giro, Erik Breukink. Let me first respond on this one as a personal point of view. I'm not here only for winners. You know, I'm here for the story. So today we had, the last 8 days, we have seen the rise and fall of Dumoulin. So even the fall, it's hard. It's maybe hard for Dumoulin, but today's fall is also part of the story. And I really enjoyed as well Brambilla's win today. I think it was a top three, Italian top three. I guess they were longing for something like this as well. We had a Ulissi win. Stage four, but I think it's always good when you ride the Giro d'Italia that an Italian guy is in pink. But let me get back to, yeah, of course, Dumoulin was big news in Holland, especially when he got the pink jersey back. I'm wondering, I guess maybe if I don't have to stay for Tom Dumoulin, I will have to stay for Steven Kruiswijk over here. So we're not done yet. So
I think you're going all the way to Turin, Dan. I wouldn't worry about that.
It might be. My girlfriend would not be so happy with it, and the boy at home neither. But you know, the work has to be done. I always tell them there are also fathers who are working on oil platform, and if I would be a baker, then I had to get up every morning at 3 o'clock, and that wouldn't be funny as well. So
this is far less glamorous, I think.
It is indeed.
Well, that's Dan. Thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully, you will be still in the race, and you can join us again one evening.
Yeah, and we might serve beer on the podcast.
That's normal. We couldn't find any beer tonight, I'm afraid. Yeah.
We've let you down there. Sorry about that. Normally we do. If there's a bar near the press room, we would have a little beer. But
we should have known, shouldn't we, that a Dutchman would want a beer. We've all driven up Alpe d'Huez and been through Dutch Corner.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport, and they are offering podcast listeners 20% off if you go to scienceandsport.com and enter the code SIS20. You can get 20% off all Science and Sport products, which is a real bargain. And you know, if you buy stuff that way, I'm sure it'll reflect well on us somehow. You know, we want to show our appreciation for them sponsoring the podcast, enabling us to be here. So you know, if you go through that process of entering the code and stuff, it'll be logged somewhere, and we'll look good. I think that's how it works, isn't it, Lionel? That's what they tell me.
That is how it works. Yeah.
So thanks very much to them. We mentioned Pedlar de Charme earlier. All our t-shirts. This is our first t-shirt plug of the Giro, but we've got a range of t-shirts with humorous slogans, or just slogans if you prefer.
Well, they've had a revamp, haven't they, for the Giro? The design has changed slightly.
I think they
look really smart.
They are smarter. Yeah. Orla Shinui modelled our No Chiro No Giro t-shirt, the women's cut, yesterday, and she tweeted a picture of that. She did actually come up with that phrase in a podcast in January, so we felt it was only fair to send her one. And they're very nice. Yeah, we've got No Chiro No Chiro No Giro, the Chiro d'Italia. We've got, you know, all the usual ones as well, and they're all there. Pedlar de Charme, if you want to be a Pedlar de Charme. And any other business, Lionel? What else do we have to talk about?
Events of today's stage have really overtaken this, but this morning I was outside the Lotto Soudal bus. They've come off the back of a hat-trick of stage wins, two for Greipel, either side of a win for Tim Wellens. Fantastic week for them. Etix Quick Step have now drawn level with them in the Battle of the Belgians, but something caught our eye this morning. Bart Layson, the Lotto Soudal sports director, had said that if his team made it three in a row on Friday, he would shave all his hair off. And he came out of the bus this morning looking similar to me in the hair department. He didn't have very much on top. And I just chatted to him, and he, this is something that he has done before. He said, I think it was it the Vuelta last year, or was it the Tour last year? It must have been the Tour last year, that if Andre Greipel won a stage, he would jump in the sea. I asked him what he would do if Lotto...
Get in the sea.
Yeah, if Lotto Soudal made it four in a row today, and he said he'd get the Gillette razor out and take his hair down to absolutely nothing, just skin. I think he's probably relieved that Etix Quick Step that Lotto Soudal, so he didn't win again today.
Absolutely. We might get in trouble from our colleague Daniel Freeb for not analysing today's instalment of The Shark's Tale, which you heard earlier. There's nothing really to analyse. It's yet more raunchy stuff. I do expect it to return to bike racing next week, but I must admit,
I'm not all that confident.
I must admit that as I watched Nibali today, shark-like, following Valverde and looking good and looking dangerous, couldn't help wondering what was actually on his mind. You know, whether the race was on his mind or whether other things were on his mind. Having had these insights into how his mind works, now every time I look at him, I imagine that he's thinking of things that aren't to do with the bike race.
Yeah, I mean, let's not get into those areas. One thing on Nibali, and I've said this before, but it really bugs me, and it's bugging me here now that we're in Italy, that he's not wearing a proper Italian national champions jersey. I know the Astana colours are this sort of baby blue that they ride in, and it's got the three colours on the chest, the wrong way round, of course. I mean, I know that cycling jerseys have to adapt the flags, but would have been such a great image, I think, today. The photography of today's stage must be fantastic. It looked great on TV, so the stills will look great. It's just a shame he's not in a proper red, white and green national champions jersey.
Yeah, one final note from today's stage. I agree with you on that, by the way, Lionel, but I do also see the sponsor's point of view that when riders are in national champions jerseys, the sponsor doesn't get the same value, I don't think, and that's
and it might
issue.
Clash horribly with baby blue shorts as well. That's something else I hadn't really factored in, but yeah, anyway,
whatever. There were three riders eliminated today. I was at the team buses, and I was hanging around there for ages. I was waiting for Matteo Trentin, who never appeared. I was waiting there for a long time, for what felt like an eternity, and as I was walking back, some police motorbikes appeared with sirens on, and I didn't know what that was all about. And then three riders appeared. Long, you know, the whole thing, the crowds had gone, the roads had almost been reopened, business as usual, and three riders appeared. Elia Viviani was one of them. Boy Van Poppel from Trek was another one, and one of the Vini Fantini riders, which...
Yuri Filosi.
Might be a relief to some people in the peloton.
One less for Max Chiandri to worry about.
I tweeted some pictures of him this morning adjusting his saddle. Oh. He was measuring his saddle. So there you are, kids. If you don't get your saddle height right, you might find yourself eliminated.
But yeah, they were 55 minutes, 26 seconds down.
Dropped in the first 30 kilometres, apparently. Right. And Viviani hasn't looked very good this Giro. Mm. So Sky are a man down. Not that he would have been much use to Landa in the mountains, but he would have been... to do some
bottle duty, that kind of thing.
So it leaves the likes of Christian Knees with a bit more to do. And that could, you never know, have some impact on Team Sky further down the road. Shall we leave it there, Lionel?
Let's do that. Let's get to our hotel.
Big day tomorrow. And let's go. Let's get on the right road, Lionel, and most importantly, come off at the right junction.
Absolutely.
That's all. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thanks, Richard.